Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. What happens when we provide people who are incarcerated with a college education? That's the focus of a new documentary, College Behind Bars, which takes a look at the Bard Prison Initiative, a program of Bard College. We're going to hear from the filmmaker and an alumnus of the program, but first we wanted to talk about it with someone who has used his platform as a professional football player to shine light on criminal justice reform, Patriot safety Devin McCourty, who's also a governing member of the NFL Players Coalition, an athlete-led organization that advocates for racial and social justice. We talked with Devin about how the film relates to his work off the field, and he started by telling us his reaction to the film.
I was blown away, I think, by the individuals that took part in the program. Not only just took part in it, but excelled. And we watch a little bit of a young man saying he would study around 2, 3 a.m. because that's when he felt like he was his best. You know, when everyone else was sleeping, you know, he would study his notes and prepare and get ready for class the next day. So I thought that was great to see them in a true human light. Just like we see the different individuals that go to school and try to become a better part of society, I think you were able to see them in that same light in this documentary.
Devin, what do you want people to take away both from this documentary and from the Bard College program for college education in prison?
I think the opportunity that we give individuals, you know, we send people away to jail and prisons to be locked away and tell them they're no good to society. But when you watch this film, you see the improvements they make, you know, obviously from an education standpoint, but just as people, you know, they walk out rehabilitated and ready to make a difference. And I hope when people watch this film, they can see not just a person thrown in prison, but a person's story come to light and how they choose to make a difference, how they choose to better themselves. And I think we all can learn from that because we all go through mistakes in life and we all try to get better from them.
Devin, you joined two former NFL players lobbying for criminal justice reform at the State House back in March, and the state's actually passed a major criminal justice reform bill that included a provision that was really important to you, raising the age at which children can be criminally prosecuted. What else do you want to see from public officials on this issue?
Yeah, that was awesome to be a part of that. And I remember right when it passed, when we talked about, you know, the next step being to raise the age on the upper end. So you can get kids between 18, 19, 20 whose brains are still developing and get them under that juvenile statute so they're not tried as adults and just thrown right into the criminal justice system and now kind of become a statistic. So right when that happened, we talked about that, and now it's kind of here. It's approaching with the opportunity to raise that age. So I'll also be heavily involved in trying to get that done.
Do you see this as your responsibility, Devin?
I do, but I don't think you can put that on everyone. But I think we all have a platform in the NFL, and you should use it for something. And I think a lot of us, you know, whether our family members or friends, have gone through different circumstances at the time that we didn't think we could do anything about, we didn't think we could fix. And now I have a platform where I can try to make a difference and make a change to some of those stories that I've had to witness or hear about. So it's been very exciting and humbling to be a part of that.
That was New England Patriots safety Devin McCourty talking about his work with the NFL Players Coalition and the documentary College Behind Bars. Devin talked about a man in the documentary who's shown studying into the wee hours of the night, the only time, he says, that he could focus in prison. The student's name is Sebastian Yoon, and the two actually met shortly after our conversation at a screening of the documentary. Sebastian earned his associate's and bachelor's degrees through the Bard Prison Initiative and is currently a program specialist for Open Society Foundations. We sat down with him and Lynn Novick, who directed and co-produced College Behind Bars, with Sarah Botstein. Sebastian said he was initially skeptical about the documentary project because of how he'd seen prisoners depicted in documentaries before.
When I watched documentaries on prison, I saw like the stereotypical image of prisoners exhibiting violent and irrational behavior. And what I imagine is that viewers would not see these individuals and say, we want these people to come back to society. Mm-hmm. They should remain in prison. However, Lynn took this very bold experiment and she said, I want to show a side of prison that most people probably never will see. And that is of just human beings being warehoused in prisons. And then now education comes in and how education transformed these individuals.
Lynn, did your understanding of the prison system evolve as you did this project?
Absolutely. I mean, I think looking back, I really didn't know that much about mass incarceration. I knew it was terrible. I knew it disproportionately affected communities of color and people in less advantaged circumstances in our society, but I'd never been inside a prison before. But I think largely what we tried to focus on in our film was what is possible, and sort of what's lacking from prison, among many, many things, is opportunity and hope and possibility. And this program and other programs like it that offer people a chance to transform themselves and get an education and leave prison prepared to reenter society. That said, we always wanted our audience to know that this was happening inside a prison. And so over time, the Department of Corrections allowed us really unprecedented access to bring our cameras to places where people don't usually go who are not incarcerated, to kind of see what it's like to be a student and be incarcerated at the same time.
Sebastian, did you have to actually apply to get into the Barred Prison Initiative?
Yeah, I had to take an entrance exam. I got in on my first try, so I was very fortunate.
Why? Why'd you apply?
I applied because, well, first, I was 21 years old, and I was having conversations with my friends who were on the outside, and they were in college, and they would talk to me about GPA and their courses while they were in the visiting room with me, and I would feel totally lost, and I would say, you know, I'm supposed to be out there going to college with you guys, and here I am sitting in prison just waiting for the day to end so that I could see the next. And this was going to be a repetitive thing until I get released 12 and a half years later.
You were incarcerated at age 16,
yes.
Right? So this was 5 years
into. This was 5 years into my thing.
So here is Max Kenner. He's the founder and executive director of BPI, and he's talking about how the inmates are treated as regular Bard students.
Mm-hmm.
When that door closes, you're at Bard College. Faculty are going to be evaluating what you do as a student exclusively. That is to say, the college has no interest in the nature of your criminal conviction, the length of your sentence, how much time you have left in prison. It's not our business. We're in the business of education. This is the thing we know how to do, and we happen to do it here.
Okay, so that was intimidating to me, just listening to him when I was watching the documentary. So your classes happened in a school setting, but the reality is that any time you weren't in the classroom, you were in prison. And
yes.
Even when you were in the classroom,
right.
You were in prison. You didn't have the resources that a traditional school setting would have, the environment. The word that kept coming up over and over was the environment is chaos.
Right.
So what challenges did that present for you?
The biggest challenge for me was catching a ticket, whether it was something I was guilty of or not. You can be.
What does that mean, catching
so,
a ticket?
So, for example, you can have a ticket for, you can get a ticket for having over 10 books in your cell because it's a fire hazard. But throughout our courses, we could have one course that gives us 10 books. So how do we navigate this? And I had my peers who actually got tickets because they had more than 10 books in their cells.
What happens when you catch a ticket?
You can get key blocked, which is like punishment. You can't come out of your cell. And then the worst one is when you're sent to SHU, which stands for Special Housing Unit, and you're locked in for 23 hours a day for like 30, 60, 90 days.
We had a chance to talk with Patriot Safety Devin McCourty.
Mm.
And when we asked him, had he seen parts of the documentary and how did he feel about them, one of the things he specifically spoke about was being struck by a prisoner who was studying, who would study at 2 or 3 in the morning when they could really focus. That was you. That was you. So how does it feel to know that your dedication to your goal, your endeavor, was inspiring not only in your context, but this is an NFL player,
right.
the height of dedication to his profession.
Right.
Were you that kind of serious about your studies?
I certainly was, but what's the thing with this documentary is that you only see a handful of us. If you only met all the other BPI students, they all do the same thing. I mean, if you look at the film, you could see the dark bags under our eyes, and that's from lack of sleep, because we really work so hard, because I've said this before, but education becomes a lifeline for us, and we hold on to it with all our heart, and that's the only thing that gives us hope in a place that is hopeless.
So that raises this question of motivation, Sebastian. Mm. Where was the urgency coming from for you?
Going to prison at the age of 16 was very difficult, and I struggled to find a reason to continue to live in prison, and I spent most of my days just staring at the ceiling, thinking about what life would be like upon being released, and everything seemed so bleak and empty, and I wanted to put color into that world, and I found it through education, the professors, the books, and despite being in such a dark place where I was dehumanized, I found purpose and I found life.
Lynn, we hear, Sebastian, in your voice, the pain of those early years and the isolation. There's a lot of the prison experience that you either don't or can't tell in the documentary. What did you not tell, and why?
You know, I think in listening to Sebastian, the thing that came to mind for me that was revelatory that I didn't understand, among many things I didn't know, was the sense of the isolation and loneliness in prison. And, you know, the stereotypes are that it's violent and scary and dangerous, but actually the dehumanizing that happens from the second you're involved in the criminal justice system is magnified and magnified. And so I was very surprised to learn from the acting commissioner of Department of Corrections in New York, Anthony Annucci. He said, my biggest problem is suicide in prison. That's a huge problem. And that speaks to the lack of hope that Sebastian's referring to. So trying to represent that, I think that was really important. Just try, how do you show loneliness? How do you show alienation and disappointment and all of that? And I think, you know, that I think just trying to get that feeling across, I'm not sure we could succeed, but that's, we definitely tried to do that in contrast to what the BPI students are experiencing.
You also juxtapose some of the other kinds of jobs that are available to inmates if they're not able to study in BPI, janitorial work, manual labor. Sebastian, did knowing what the alternatives were, both, how did it feel to be among inmates who weren't having the same opportunities that you were? And are there other ways to help inmates find hope and purpose? Mm-hmm. Or is this really that rare and exclusive an opportunity?
Well, we as soon as we become Bard College students, we become proponents of education. We change the very atmosphere of the prison in which we are staying at. You'll notice that every time the entrance exam comes around in the summertime, about 2-3 months prior, we start going to the yard and we start having discussions with others, telling them, hey, the entrance exam is coming in 3 months. Do you want to study up? And then you'll actually see inmates in the yard, both BPR students and non-BPR students, seeing and reading books and going over grammar and writing and philosophy, just having discussions.
So we do have to talk about crime. This is a college program that happens in a prison environment. Sebastian, you say in the documentary that you were incarcerated because you got into a fight and someone died. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel tension between your crime and the fact that you got a college degree, mm-hmm. essentially as a result of right. that crime?
I don't want to say that I got as a result of my crime. It's just that I got it in spite of my crime. I was in a situation where I went to prison for that crime, and I took the best opportunity that I could in order to rectify the past wrongs in the best way I can.
How did your education change your understanding of where you'd come from and the reason you were in prison?
Well, education provided me the opportunity for a lot of self-reflection and kind of get over my insecurities and acknowledge my insecurities. When I was a teenager, I recognized that I wanted to feel loved and I wanted power because I felt weak. I was a victim of bullying and I went to the streets and that's where I found power. And going to prison, I lost everything. And I was just reduced to just a shell of a human being. And education, like I said again, was the only thing that I could hold on to.
The BPI is not without controversy, especially around funding. There's a lot of debate over whether public funds should be used to provide college education to inmates, mm-hmm. Whether this benefit should even exist. Here's one subject, Peter Lopez, explaining why some don't like the idea of paying for the program.
A lot of people feel that they work damn hard to support their families and that if anyone should get an education, it should be their children, not someone who has menaced society, has committed crimes against citizens, but they named this thing the Department of Corrections. How could you correct someone if you're taking the very tools that actually correct and rehabilitate the individuals that you want to be protected from?
Sebastian, what's your reaction to that?
Here's the economical argument. So there are over 2.1 million inmates across the United States in prison and jails. For every dollar that we spend on education today, we would save $4 to $5 every year. We actually, let me also add the recidivism rate. Nationally, it's 67% within the first 5 years. For BPI students, it's less than 5%. But I think that people often overlook the economical arguments and the recidivism arguments.
One of the things that is striking about the documentary is the way that people inside the prison begin to understand their relationship with the community outside the prison. How did you set out to tell that story, or did that part tell itself?
It does become a theme of the film, and it, I think, challenges all of us to ask the same question Sebastian was saying about, you know, what is prison for? Who has access to education? And what are we as citizens demanding of our leaders who have these put these systems in place that are totally broken? But we also tell a different story now, which is we've seen change, and we built that in over time, that in 2016, the Obama administration reinstituted a small sort of experimental version of Pell Grants and made college available to 12,000 people who weren't having it before across the country. And the Trump administration is actually expanding that program. So I think we're seeing a more common sense criminal justice reform conversation and understanding that education has to be at the core of anything that's going to be meaningful.
Sebastian, you cited earlier the statistics on recidivism. You re-entered society. You are at a prestigious foundation now. What difference did your college degree make in your re-entry?
I don't think I would be in OSF right now if I did not have that degree because, you know, it struck me when I wrote my resume and cover letter that most of my experiences came from prison work, like working in the mess hall, cooking burgers. And how could I go to OSF and say, hey, this is my resume. Can you give me a job? Of course not. It was the BA, the bachelor's degree from BPI, that gave me the opportunity to go into the interview and then prove myself that I was worthy of this.
I want to talk about your father for a minute, Sebastian. You gave a speech at your commencement, and during that speech, you apologized to your dad. Here's some of that.
My dad. Papa, I'm sorry for having dishonored our family. For putting you through such undeserved and unbearable pain. 아빠, 사랑합니다. Thank you.
Your father was there. What was it like to be able to share that accomplishment with him and give him that message?
Well, having raised me by himself, that man has loved me tremendously, and I felt like by coming to prison, I've hurt the only person that really truly loved me. And that moment was for me to say, here's the beginning of my redemption. Here's my moment to become a son who can make you proud. And that was the highlight of my BPI career, to have spoken that message to my dad and to have received that degree. And my dad, from that day on, he was so happy, and he would actually brag to his buddies that my son, you know, despite being in prison, has obtained a college degree.
You also talk about, in the documentary, you talk about being on a high from graduation, but then right after the ceremony, you have this realization.
You have this big smile on your face when you're leaving the auditorium and the mess hall, and you see this room, and then all of a sudden, reality just comes crashing upon you. And then you say, oh, this is my reality. But I thought what just happened in the auditorium was also reality. So you have this problem where you have to try to juggle these two realities, one of which is so beautiful and one of which is so dark and disgusting.
What's your reality now?
My reality is I'm just looking forward. I think in prison, all we did in the prior to BPI is think about what I should have done and could have done. And after BPI, it was about what should I do in spite of my past.
Lynn, do you think about and do you worry about the BPI graduates who still have time to serve when they've completed their degrees?
I mean, that is one of the unusual aspects of this particular college program, that not every student who graduates leaves campus, and there are people who are still there, sometimes for many years and sometimes for a shorter amount of time. But I think what's wonderful is that the program gives them the opportunity to keep taking classes. You can even have a whole other major sometimes and, you know, a whole new course of study, and also sort of mentor the students coming in. And so I think it's given everybody, they would say, an opportunity to find purpose, even in a place where that's very hard to do. And luckily, I think the parole system in New York State anyway is evolving so that people are getting released when they're up for parole more often than they used to. So there's more hope for that. But it is hard, for sure, that you could graduate and still be there.
Sebastian, you're going to do events with community, but also with communities, excuse mm-hmm. me, but also in prisons around the film. What do you hope those who are still incarcerated but will see this documentary, what do you hope they'll take away?
See that they could be in the same position as we are, who are in social reform work, that you don't have to come home and think that your ceiling is working somewhere at like Walmart. Like, that's what I used to think, that when I come home, I can't do any serious jobs. I'm not putting down anybody that works there, but there's that notion that if you come out of prison, you're going to be sweeping floors. You're going to be mopping floors. You're going to be putting stocks on the cabinets. You can do something more. You can become somebody.
And Lynn, what do you want the public to take away from watching this?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things, the themes that comes out, which is sort of what Sebastian's just alluding to, is this horrendous sense of untapped potential and the tyranny of low expectations and the just intellectual capacity that's being wasted in our society, particularly in communities of color and behind prison walls, and that we have to really rethink who has capacity, who has potential. And this program is a shining example of what can happen when people are given an opportunity to excel and expected to excel. And this film is about, certainly it takes place in prison and it's about incarceration, but it's really about the transformative power of education. And we hope that lots of people will watch it and begin to ask these kind of really important questions.
Lynn Novick, one of the filmmakers behind College Behind Bars, thanks so much for being here today.
It's a privilege. Thank you.
And Sebastian Yoon, who earned both an associate's degree and a bachelor's degree from the Barred Prison Initiative. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
The second half of College Behind Bars airs tonight on PBS. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.